What's up? Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, because your income doesn't have to stop when your workday does. In this episode, you're going to meet the side hustler who learned a new skill set and turned it into a six-figure business. To make it happen, though, Brian Geeran battled through 11 months of not getting a single client. Today, though, customers are happy to pay him and his agency, RicochetDM.com, $1,500 a month and up to spearhead their online marketing efforts. Stick around in this one to learn the most effective ways to connect with customers, how you might navigate the freelance trap, the so-called freelance trap of selling your own skills, and how to keep customers coming back month after month after month. We also chat what kept Brian going during that long sales drought and what he thinks was really holding him back. Notes and links to all the resources mentioned in this episode are at sidehustlenation.com/Brian. It's Brian with an E, B-R-I-E-N. I'll be back with my top takeaways from this call with Brian after the interview. Ready? Let's do it.
I was working a full-time job in sales / marketing, and then necessity came around where it was like, I need to get into something. I would need to be an entrepreneur if I'm going to be happy in my life. My happiness for myself and my wife, my kids were first and foremost. And if I'm going to be unhappy in my career, then chances are I'm going to have trouble being happy at home too. So it was really necessity that precipitated it, and looked at starting a digital business and starting it on the side. So while still earning money from a job, but also building something and trying to scale it, starting slow and building it up on the side.
I think that resonates with a lot of people, this feeling of like, well, I don't really love where I'm at and the grass is always greener. But then it kind of becomes this idea or analysis paralysis of like, well, there's so many options out there. It sounds like you were kind of honing in on something that was location independent to a certain extent, something that could be done online evenings and weekends, and then happened upon, well, what if I help other people with their marketing? I have a little bit of sales and marketing background. What if I turned around and sold that as a freelance service, essentially?
I was in sales and I started shifting myself more towards digital marketing, and found myself heading towards full-time agency ownership. And that's where we are now.
Okay. Was there a moment of just putting yourself out there and saying, I know what I'm talking about. I could do this for other people. Was there a period of, upskilling and learning how to do something? I'm curious, what came first, like the offer or the skill set or the client? It's a lot of things that have to be in alignment.
Yeah, it was the stars aligning. I kind of found my way into this through, I was following a financial blogger. I really got into personal finance in the 2015, 2016 timeframe, where it was really time to buckle down and learn how to be financially responsible. And I got very interested in that. And it was a friend of this financial blogger who was starting a course on Facebook ads. And I had just taken a six-month course through a startup company in San Francisco, where it was basically an all-around digital marketing course, where you learn everything from running Google ads, learning basic HTML for web design, learning about what goes into graphic design, running Facebook ads, general social media advertising, email marketing. And after this ended, I swear it was divine intervention, because the blogger that I was following put a plug out for one of his other financial blogging friends who had just created a course on how to run Facebook ads on behalf of small local businesses as a side hustle to make an extra $1,000 or $2,000 a month.
Okay. This is Bobby. What's the name of the course? Like, I know this course, like it's come up before.
Yeah. The Facebook Side Hustle course, and that was created by Bobby Hoyt and Mike Yonda. They're the awesome owners of Laptop Empires, and they're still my mentors to this day. They taught me everything I know, even just from the basics of how to run and create and handle a Facebook ad to building and scaling a small agency built off the back of running digital ads for small businesses.
Okay. And Bobby was like millennialmoneyman.com,
yes,
or something.
Millennial Money Man. Yep. He's the man.
I know we've crossed paths at FinCon for sure.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. So it was at that time, right between finishing that course, and it was at that stage where I'm like, all right, there's something I can do here. I out of the students in that course, we had the ability to run live Facebook ads on behalf of this company. And out of like 5,000 students, my ads finished in the top 5 results for Facebook ads. So that's where I saw that, okay, that was pretty fun. I'm putting my English degree to work with copywriting. And apparently I can do this all right, even though it's a very small snapshot. And I thought to myself, now this is something I could turn into something.
Sorry, say that again. So they give you like a little bit of budget to advertise for them, and it's like an internal contest?
Yep. You had, I think it was either 3 or 4 weeks of running live Facebook ads to the real general public that is promoting this course.
Okay.
And so it was a really cool real world, real life scenario where you're going to create these ads and it's not a mock-up. They're going out to the real world. And it was basically lead generation for this course. So it was kind of free labor on their part. But at the same time, it got me some experience and showed me that this is something I could do. And it was fun. It was, you know, it wasn't the hardest thing in the world. I knew there was a lot more to learn in that vein. But that's where I finished that. And then like literally 4 days later, I got an email that was telling me about this course that Bobby Hoyt and Mike Yonda created that teaches you how to do exactly what I just thought to myself would be a good place to get into. So yeah, and from there, it took off.
Okay, that's a really creative way to test things out and say, well, you don't have a customer yet. We'll be your first customer and here, go do some promotion for us. And it turned out that you had a knack for applying what you learned and okay, we can do this. From there to finding another client. So that, I want to highlight, look, I have the ability to learn new skills and not saying I'm static. Well, this is what I went to school for. This is what my, you know, this is what I got hired to do for my day job. So that's it, I guess. Like, so you have the ability to learn new skills and making some proactive investments on that front. And then, so that kind of gives you the confidence to say, okay, I think I could do this. Talk to me about the journey from, okay, this reskilling or reeducation to a first like paying customer outside of that.
It was a long journey, to be honest with you. From the time that I started the course until actually landing a client was about 11 months. And Mike and Bobby always like to give me a tough time in the mentorship group because it's like, not a tough time, but they say, you know, if you stick with it, like look at Brian, it took him 11 dang months to sign someone. But it that was my learning curve in learning basically how to sell. Because it wasn't just now that I have this technical skill that I know I can do and I can use to help others grow their business. Then it's a matter of going out and convincing people you can do it. So it took me a little while. And, you know, and all the while, you know, taking that course, getting the technical skill of actually learning how to create, run, and manage Facebook ads to going out and selling it was a totally different ballgame.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that 11-month time frame because I don't know that a lot of people would stick with it that long. And we had a similar story with Benny Hsu selling, you know, Teespring t-shirts. Like my first 22 campaigns failed to even break even. But on that 23rd, you know, that's when I started to see the light. And it's like, I think a lot of people would have given up after 2, 3, 4, you know, swings and misses. This just isn't for me. Do you mind sharing what ultimately worked? What convinced somebody to say yes?
When I got into this, I said, there is no plan B. I'm going to make this work and I'm going to stick with it. And the only way I fail is if I quit. So yeah, what ended up happening, I got my first client from basically it's called the LinkedIn method where you're prospecting on LinkedIn. So it was a local real estate agent here who he probably shouldn't have been in the business. He wasn't, he was maybe as green as I was and respectively in his business. But it really got me over that hump of, okay, now I know how to sell this. Someone believed in me and gave me an opportunity to run lead gen for them. And then after that, my biggest method of client acquisition came from joining my local chamber of commerce. I realized that I was one of those people where I'm the most comfortable when I'm out and meeting someone in person, building that know, like, and trust factor with them. But getting out and meeting people and listening to them and understanding what their problems were when it comes to digital marketing and really honing in on what I can offer these people really was big for me. So I joined my local chamber of commerce. The president of the chamber asked if I'd do a lunch and learn on Facebook ads. She's like, this is fascinating. And we always get questions on Facebook and nobody has any answers for it. So I said, and Mike and Bobby always said, just say yes, go out and do it. So I hadn't done any public speaking since I was in college, but I was like, all right, let's do it. So I had 15 people show up at this lunch and learn. I booked 8 meetings off of it and my next 4 clients came through that. So that's when I really figured out that, okay, this might be a good pathway to start growing this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen people take the same strategy online with virtual lunch and learn, like virtual workshops, like, hey, we're going to come and do the hour-long presentation. And we had Dustin Lean on the podcast, you know, similar digital marketing agency for, you know, direct-to-consumer e-commerce brands. And it doesn't even have to have a sales pitch, because it's like you are establishing your credibility and authority and expertise in this area where if people have questions, now naturally you're the go-to person for that. So I love that strategy, trying to think of, well, who are your target customers already doing businesses? Where are they already hanging out? Here was an interesting way to get in front of them. I do want to go back really quick, because you mentioned the LinkedIn method and you connected with this realtor or real estate agent. How did that happen? Was that like a cold outreach, inviting somebody to connect? Is this publishing content on LinkedIn? What does that part look like?
So it's actually a method that I learned through the mentorship group in the Facebook Side Hustle course. One of the client acquisition methods and one of the coaches they brought on taught you how to prospect on LinkedIn. So everything from how to optimize your profile for searchability and for basically turning your LinkedIn profile into like a sales page, you know, making it all about what someone who's coming to see you, making it about their pain points and how you can help them. And then also, you know, using Sales Navigator as a reach out strategy. So sending out, I think it was you in Sales Navigator, you got up to 100 connection requests you can send out per day. So picking a niche or picking a certain area and sending out requests, and then he would help you with, once you connect with people, the messaging and how to connect with them through LinkedIn Messenger, and then get them from a Messenger conversation onto the phone.
Do you remember what your initial outreach was like in terms of like what specifically you might put in your initial, you know, request to connect or in your initial message?
Yeah. So initially, like when you send out a connection request, you'd attach a little note that says, hello, so-and-so, would love to connect with you. I'm looking to build my professional network in, like if it's real estate, in the local real estate market in whatever part of town you're in. And then you say, sincerely, Brian. And then you send that out, and those who would connect with you, you'd get your connection confirmed, and then you give it a day or two, and then you hop into Messenger and say, hey, so-and-so, thank you so much for connecting. Really appreciate it. And then typically, I think it was at that point, you end with like a question. So something that would request them to answer, or, and I don't mean something like annoying and salesy, like, do you have 10 minutes for a call? Like, obviously that never works and everybody hates getting that, right? We get our inboxes blown up all the time with stuff like that. So I think it was something along the lines of asking them their favorite method of lead gen. Something along those lines, where it's not annoying, it's not overpowering, it's not salesy. It's just asking a general question like, hey, you know, I was curious, how do you handle your lead gen? Or, you know, what's your favorite of lead gen in your business, or your favorite way to produce leads in your business?
Yeah, it's just conversational. It almost positions them as the expert and say, oh, well, let me share you a cool tip or something like.
Right, exactly. And then naturally that conversation would hopefully flow into how they do it. You know, and a lot of times Facebook or Instagram would get mentioned, and then I'd be able to drop a fresh nug of, you know, how, so you're doing this on Facebook. Have you tried this method, or have you, you know, what's the budget you use, if I could ask? Because if, you know, if you extend your budget here, or maybe even lessen it here, maybe that's something that could go a long way in terms of improving your lead gen. So providing some sort of value up front, and, you know, with no expectation of anything in return, it really gets people to start knowing, liking, and trusting you a lot quicker than if you were to just jump down their throat with the sales pitch.
Yeah, totally. And then meanwhile, your profile is optimized or set up in such a way that it reads like a landing page or like a sales page for this ideal customer. Like, so if they do click through to that, they kind of can get a sense for what you do and who you do it for. And you can even tailor it. Like if you're in a period of reaching out to realtors, you know, you can tailor that to, you know, be specific to that industry. And if you're reaching out to somebody in a different industry, like, oh, okay, I can tweak my profile around to really make it seem like I'm the go-to guy for this space.
Exactly. And then that also gets into the content marketing. LinkedIn is still kind of the Wild West when it comes to organic reach with your posts. So if you have engaging and valuable posts that you put out there on a regular basis, whether it's every day, every other day, a couple times a week, as long as they're good, they're engaging, and they're value, then all the people that you add as connections, especially if they scroll through and stop over your page or over your post, or they engage with it, they're going to be seeing a lot more of your stuff in the coming weeks. So it's a great way to break into content marketing on LinkedIn as well.
And do you have an example of a post or type of post that does well for you over there?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you this year, a lot of stuff that's worked really well is posts around iOS 14. So we get questions on that all the time. So being able to put a post out there that either dispels a common rumor or common myth about it, or just informs you on, you know, how the conversion window has shrunk. Whereas a lot of times the articles you read on across any news channel isn't really going to mention that, or especially if you're not involved in the space, you're not going to understand what that means. So breaking things down like that a little bit are the type of content that are going to help a business owner or those who are in the niche that you're trying to speak to.
Okay, yeah. So some current events or timely topics in your field of expertise. Still to come in this episode, the impact that iOS 14 and the subsequent tracking limitations have had on Brian's business, how he prices his service, and why he tries to live 1 year in the future. But at this point in the interview, Brian's at this great moment in his business. He's just gone from pre-revenue to revenue. He's got some customers. When that happens for you, and I do believe it's not if, it's when that happens for you, that's when you start your 30-day free trial of our sponsor, FreshBooks, at freshbooks.com/sidehustle, and you fire up a professional-looking, branded invoice in just a few clicks, and you get paid fast. FreshBooks is the award-winning, all-in-one accounting solution that's built for business owners like you. How it works is FreshBooks takes all of the not-so-fun parts of running a business, like building and tracking invoices, like managing expenses, like managing online payments, and it just automates and simplifies them. Consistent FreshBooks users report saving up to 11 hours a week in the process. That means a lot more time to move your business forward. And come tax time, FreshBooks has your back. You're going to find a ton of helpful reports to choose from, so you know exactly where your business stands, and you can easily hand over the keys to your accountant so they can take over when it's time to reconcile everything for the year. Give FreshBooks a try free for 30 days. There's no credit card required. Just go to freshbooks.com/sidehustle to get started today. One more time, that's freshbooks.com/sidehustle to get more time back to build the business you love. On that topic, like, I mean, that's the elephant in the room when it comes to Facebook ads. It's like, well, now you get no attribution and all these Apple privacy things. Like, has that impacted your ability to run this business? Have you lost clients as a result? Like, what's been the impact there?
It has been interesting. It's honestly, it's kind of varied per account and per area that we are advertising in. So one of our clients was in Australia. We had a large hair brand in Australia. And the impact of iOS 14 dropping was huge. Our reporting on our conversion side was way off. Now, luckily, we had a server side reporting system on their end to where I could log in and look and see what the actual lead reports or sale reports were. But the problem is on the Facebook side, on my dashboard where I have the quickest access, it was not accurate. You know, it could be off from in lead generation. It was off anywhere from 5 to 20 leads per week. And then in the conversion space where they had kind of a front end offer, that was like $150 front end offer. And those conversions, the people who purchased that offer, those numbers were completely off. They just weren't reliable on the Facebook end. Again, luckily we had them on their side, on the server side, but it threw a big wrench in the system there. It was a huge pain in the butt. But then we have accounts stateside here where we're pretty big in the automotive space. So once iOS 14 dropped, we noticed anywhere from 5 to 8 or 10 lead discrepancy per week. Now, it's been interesting as we went through 2021, I started noticing that discrepancy started dropping a little bit to where we were generally off only about 2 to 5 leads per week. And I know speaking with Mike and Bobby, I know some of Mike's agency clients, my mentor, he said they really haven't seen a huge impact at all. So it's kind of been one of those things where it dropped, everybody freaked out. Some agencies, some people were seeing huge impacts, and other agencies and other business owners weren't seeing massive impacts. Yeah. So it really depends on your industry. It depends on your location. And it depends on the type of campaigns you're running. Like, for example, campaigns that are housed on Facebook, you're not really as impacted by that. It's the ones that take you like a conversion campaign to a landing page or to a ClickFunnels page or a website. Those are the ones that can be really impacted.
Yeah, so you're obviously still able to collect leads and conversions if those happen on your website. It's just a challenge on the attribution side, and then that throws the algorithmic optimization of those ads into a loop if they're not getting fed back the accurate conversion data on the back end.
Yep. That's the biggest thing is the, you know, so let's say in reality, you had 10 leads this week, but Facebook only recorded 4 of them because 6 of them came from opted out devices. The algorithm is going to look at that and say, oh my, so our lead totals are down. It's going to start making adjustments based on that number. That's where it can really get thrown off. Your numbers are just, you know, you might have a really high CTR or click-through rate, but your results are about half of what they really are on the Facebook side. So as an advertiser, you're going to look at that and be like, okay, well, that's no bueno. You know, it just throws everything off when there's that much of a discrepancy.
Yeah. And all of a sudden clients are saying, well, we're paying how much per lead now? You promised us this or what, you know, 2 years ago it was X amount. Like, well, hold on, sir. You know, this is still happening, but okay. On that note, how do you figure out how much to charge for this? You're reaching out to people on LinkedIn. You finally get a realtor that raises his hand and says, all right, sign me up. How do you figure out like, okay, this is real. This is happening. Now I got to figure out how much to charge.
When I first started out, you know, I started a little lower just to build my confidence. But now we are, it totally varies per client. So every client has different needs, different wants, different budgets, and different abilities to pay for their marketing. So our general ballpark for general Facebook and Instagram ads type of client account is $1,500 per month. Now, there are some clients who pay $2,000, $2,500, $3,000, depending on what they need or how many additional services they want. So my agency, we broke into also handling email marketing for our clients. And then recently, in the last 6 months or so, we added a partner on my team who handles our Google accounts, so Google advertising. So we have different levels of fees for the additional services that people decide to bring on. But some clients, they want to do a very minimal budget on Facebook, and what they're trying to do is not challenging funnels. They're not huge funnels. They really just want, like if it's a local coffee shop, for example, and they only want to spend the bare minimum that we recommend of $500 per month on Facebook, and they want to run like a coupon campaign where people convert into collecting a coupon. So that would be, we'd probably charge in the ballpark of about $1,000 a month for that, $1,000 to $1,100. And then hopefully they're bringing us on for email as well, where we, depending on email frequency and how many flows or things that they want in there. And generally on the local side, it's mostly the newsletter marketing that we help with. So it's typically biweekly or monthly. And that averages anywhere from $300 to $500 per month.
Okay. Hey, that's helpful to hear for the standpoint of $1,500 bucks a month. It may not take very many clients to replace your day job income or turn this into a full-time thing. So they're spending that. That's like your fee, and then they're also spending, you know, whatever amount they set as their ads budget. And so it's like, I don't want to do this myself. It seems complicated, or maybe I've tried in the past and it didn't work. I want to hire an expert to do this for me. Here's the agency fee for your expertise and setting up and split testing and all the stuff that goes into it. And then here's our ad spend budget on top of that. And then we're going to measure the results. And then I was going to ask, so you mentioned real estate, you mentioned automotive, you mentioned hair care. Is this just once I know how to do this thing, I can do it for anybody? Or is there a specialization or a handful of industries that you tend to focus on or you found better results with?
When I started this out, I felt a lot of pressure to niche down. So for like the first like 8 months, I was like, I'm going all in on doing this for real estate agents. And then I quickly learned that it's a lot of agents, unless you're working with the top 1% or 0.5%. There's a lot of agents out there, no offense, real estate agents, but there's a lot of them out there that don't have a marketing budget, or they think they do and they really don't, or they also have a tough time in their sales processes, you know, following up with new leads that come in, staying on top of people that come in their front door. So, and it was at that point where I was struggling to get traction in the real estate space that I was like, you know what? These skills are transferable across industries. And it honestly would be more fun to get to work with people in different industries. Because I, when I work with my clients, I learn a lot about their business. I have to if I'm going to be their marketer, right? If I'm going to be putting their stuff out there on blast, and you know, I have to know what I'm talking about and know about their business in order to come out with the right voice for it. So I decided to be industry agnostic, if you will, and you know, put my stuff out there and help as many industries as I can. And my thought process was, maybe a niche will find me. It's actually been interesting in the last about 6 to 8 months here, a niche kind of did find me where we really want to work with breweries and event centers, or breweries with adjacent event centers. We have a system that's been working really well for lead generation, for booking weddings in the event center, as well as handling the brewery marketing. So whether it's brand awareness or, you know, traffic campaigns, running ads if they have concerts or, you know, local musicians that come in, or if they ever want to run like coupon ads or, you know, claim this ad to get a, you know, a free pretzel with a purchase of a beer. So handling that, it's kind of the two-pronged effect of lead generation for their event center, which is a huge moneymaker if they, especially if they handle weddings. And then for the brewery, which is, you know, the anchor of their business is selling beer, you know, selling their liquor products. So, and I had been working with a country club locally here to me and helping them book more meetings for newly engaged women within the last 12 months that are aged 25 to 50 that are probably on the market for a reception hall.
I like it. I mean, it's really interesting to hear both on the you people advertising really low ticket stuff, like come get a pint versus come have your wedding here. I'm thinking like, okay, for a real estate agent, a lead could be, you know, worth $20,000. So it's like, oh yeah, well, I'll invest some in marketing to get that lead. I'll invest some money to get those brides in the door to book their wedding at our venue. Yeah, that is worth a whole lot versus like have a pretzel. Like it seems like, oh man, I got to do that. I got to make it up on volume. This is interesting to hear. You make both ends of it work and it's just kind of a different pitch.
In that vein, on the brewery side, those are typically ads that are more awareness based, like your general reach campaigns, engagement or video views, you know, building up the online presence of the brewery and then helping them with their newsletter marketing. So I think that's a huge asset that a lot of local businesses in general, but a lot of breweries don't utilize or utilize as often or as regularly as they should is their email list. Because these are people who have signed up, whether on their website or through a loyalty program in the brewery, where they're telling you, I want to hear from you. You know, I would like to see an update from you on, you know, what musicians are in this weekend or what's on tap this weekend. What are you guys doing for Paddy's Day or for Christmas that's upcoming? You know, what are your hours? I think that's a great way to stay in contact with people that are your top customers. So on the brewery side, we don't do a ton of like the coupon ads unless they really want to, or a lot of, you know, conversion style campaigns. It's mostly just reach out campaigns, you know, introducing your brewery to a newer or cold audience and bringing them into your world, getting them on your email list. So like a lot of email list building campaigns and staying in contact and getting people in your world through regular communication on email. That's the big benefit on the brewery side for the advertising and email.
Yeah, and we've seen how Facebook will kind of throw in some social proof, you know, with your friends who like Shadow Puppet Brewing or whoever. It's like, oh, okay, well, Nick already likes this. So it's like a warmer lead, you know, 1 degree of separation removed versus, well, you know, why is this showing up in my feed?
Yep.
And this has opened you up to, oh, it doesn't have to be local anymore. I could do this for anybody all over the country. Is that similar LinkedIn style outreach, or is it word of mouth? Like what's working on the marketing engine? Is it Facebook ads for you in this case? Like what's working for you to generate conversations and leads?
Yeah. So for me personally, it's mostly through my referral network right now. I have run Facebook ads for myself in the past, but that was before I was, you know, I had a set system in a specific area. You know, it's my biggest thing when I was running ads was I was getting leads from all over the place. And they are typically, it's a cold audience. So it was people that weren't necessarily looking to hear from me, but maybe they were curious. And then it turned into a lot of folks who had no clue what they were getting into, or that, you know, hey, I just started a business and I have $3 to put into marketing. Can we work together? And I'd have to be like, no, I don't think we're a great fit, but you know, I'm wishing you the best and I want to hear from you down the road when you're ready to really invest in this. So for me, knowing my numbers, my best leads weren't coming from Facebook or from Instagram ads. They were really coming from creating my local network here and letting that refer out. So I've had clients all over the country. I've had that client in Australia, and it's mostly come through my referral network and across a lot of different industries. So, and knowing where my leads come from, right now it's still the referral network.
Okay. Yeah, I'm thinking of, you know, how can you do that, you know, lunch and learn strategy on steroids? You know, could you show up to the, you know, the brewery and event center conference and do a talk on digital marketing and like, okay, establish credibility in that way? Because imagine, I mean, the way you have it set up is recurring, unless it's like, you know, a limited time campaign, or, you know, maybe for the events, maybe it's somewhat seasonal, but like, okay, if I can get this client on today, it's not a one-off thing. It's like they keep coming back month after month after month. Do you find that people tend to stick around for a while as long as you're delivering results?
Yeah, absolutely. So my longest tenured client came about, let's see, 8 months after I landed my first one, and he's still with me. So we're going on 4 years together. You know, my goal with my clients is a long-term relationship because my jam is helping other people grow their business. I absolutely love seeing that. And I know how big a part marketing and lead generation is. And that's what I like to, you know, that's what really gets me going. But at the same time, if I'm helping them grow, they're sticking with me for a long time and I'm growing too. That's my ultimate goal. So I have a pretty darn low churn rate, which I'm very proud of because we do really good work. And I, you know, now I have an assistant that works with me and another partner that handles my Google accounts. So we've been doing really well. And it's a big part of me. I came from a customer experience model. So I used to work down at the Cincinnati Reds when I was in college. And I learned all about customer experience from the guy who he was responsible for the big customer experience turnaround at Delta back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And he was the head of customer experience at the Cincinnati Reds. So I learned all about, you know, going the extra mile on behalf of your clients and not just being another agency, not just being another guy that provides a service, but actually providing a service with that's actually going to, you know, bring a smile to people, that's going to go the extra mile, whether it's, you know, sending new client gifts or thank you letters or, you know, working together anniversaries or, you know, every time I sign a new client, I ask them when their birthday is. Because I like to send a little card or maybe a little gift card or a little gift on their birthday. And, you know, making sure that communication is a huge part of my business because there's in the marketing space, there's a lot of businesses where or a lot of agencies where it's difficult to get in touch with someone. And I always pride myself on being accessible, putting the client first and making sure they're having a great experience while working with me too.
Yeah, keep people happy, make sure the word of mouth referral engine keeps spinning favorably in your direction.
Right.
Because business owners tend to know other business owners. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if Brian becomes the go-to guy for that, hey, these conversations come up. Have you tried this? Oh, yeah, we're getting great results with working with this guy.
People do business with people. They like to do business with people. People don't want to do business with businesses. So when you're the face of your company, when you are the one that your clients turn to and they know you're going to be there for them, that puts them more at ease because they like you, they know you, and they trust you, right? When you give them the ability to do business with a person, it's just like being friends, right? It doesn't have to be business on business. It's just friends doing business with friends.
Are you doing anything to incentivize those word of mouth referrals? Like, oh, we'll give you $200 off your next month's, you know, contract or something like that?
It kind of depends on, you know, if I have a great referral partner, I usually do like, you know, I'll just cut you a check for $250. If you send someone my way or vice versa. I've had a couple different folks where I say, you know, you got a $100 gift card coming your way or one of those, Visa, you know, use anywhere type of gift cards. So I like to reward those who do me which turns out to be a super solid when someone refers me a client because they typically stick around for a solid lifetime value. And I like to treat people the way I'd like to be treated. Not that I go out and do things expecting for anything in return, but it is just a nice gesture to give them a little thank you or, you know, a nod their way for really looking out for you and supporting you.
Yeah, for sure. So you're doing this on the side for, it sounds like a couple of years at least at this point. At what point do you feel comfortable calling it quits at the day job?
So I called it quits at the day job about 2 years into this, or 1.5 years, 2 years into this. So I went full-time with this back in, that would have been beginning of 2019 now, or early 2020, I think it was. Yeah, my years are all mixed up.
COVID will do that to you.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, it was, but it was at that point where I'm like, all right, I'm making enough money here to where I can comfortably part with where I'm at right now. And honestly, that was a huge catalyst to my business spiking because it was one of those things where I'm putting, you know, a decent amount of time into my day job, probably more into my side job because it was more fun. But it was just one of those things where I think it was a mindset freeing my mindset where I'm like, all right, now I'm 100% in. I don't have that safety net, which I was always grateful for. And now it's really time to turn on the afterburners. If I'm going to make this work and this is really, truly what it's going to scale into what I believe it can be, now's the time to do it. So, and it's funny how every time it's scary to pull out your safety net, but once you pull it, for me, it took off.
Yeah, well, you free up, like you said, that mental bandwidth and all those hours in the week to not have to be working for somebody else. You're like, okay, now I can pour some fuel on this fire. Was there a revenue target or a monthly recurring revenue target that you're like, okay, now I'm good. This could be my full-time thing.
For me, that was a monthly revenue target around that point was about $6,500 in revenue a month, which for me with my, you know, in this digital business was an extremely low overhead. So that was enough for me to leave a couple bucks into the business and still pay myself the wage that myself and my family needed to have coming from me. You know, we were scraping the bottom for a couple months there, you know, and I, especially when I first started this, my wife and I had just bought our first house. We just found out we were pregnant with our first kid. So it was hairy for a while. And then when I first went out and really did this on my own, I was like, okay, we might have a couple uncomfortable months, but what I had in the pipeline and what came to fruition all worked out really well.
I know several guests have mentioned the baby effect of like, well, nothing like a 9-month deadline to spark some motivation. So I got to make this work. I got to have to buy some diapers and some daycare here pretty quick. So let's do this.
It's funny how that works, isn't it?
I found the same thing. Like early on in our kid's life, I called it like much less productive, but much more effective. Like, you know, as the hours available got really squeezed, it's like, okay, you know, cutting out all this other stuff that just maybe is not as important. And it takes that like moment of clarity to say, okay, no, if you only have this amount of time, then this is what's going to get done.
Yep.
One thing, Brian, that you mentioned was, you know, this personal touch, people do business with people. And some people would argue that's kind of a trap in the freelance space. If you get into, you know, selling your own expertise, like, you know, I'm hiring Brian, I'm not hiring Ricochet DM. I want to work with you. How have you combated that to, you know, expand to having your Google Ads expert, to having like other people on your team who are maybe equally or better qualified to do the work, but, you know, they're not the face of the brand?
Right. So the way I have it structured right now, and, you know, it's as an entrepreneur, I'm always trying to live 1 year in the future so that I can plan and have my business where I want it to be 1 year from now. When it comes to client relations versus fulfillment, that's where I brought on my assistant. She does a fantastic job of basically doing the fulfillment work. So everything from the ad creation, the, you know, the practicing of it, where I reserve my time for business development and client relations. So I'm still the person that my clients are talking to. And across the board, I've found that a lot of clients, or they've either come to me this way, or my current clients say, we really enjoy having the communications be with one guy, and it's the owner. And we know he knows what he's doing. Even if he has helpers that are, you know, helping to produce the work, he's the one that we're contacting. If there's ever an issue, we're calling Brian. If we're, you know, if we have questions, we're emailing Brian. There's going to come a time where I'm not going to be able to be the single face of this business on every single account. You know, I'm going to have to build a culture in this company where there's probably going to be client relations involved for those who are doing the work, or at least, you know, a dedicated client manager who their job is being what I'm doing right now. But it's something that there will come a time where I need to start mapping out how to handle that, because there's only so much time in the day. And a lot of times client things come up where there's a short timetable, or, you know, they need something quickly. And if I'm out meeting with prospects or meeting with other clients, I like to take my clients out to lunch once a quarter just to have a sit down and catch up. If they're local to me, I like to sit down and catch up with them, buy them a lunch or buy them a drink, and check in with them. And those who are not local to me, I like to, you know, have a little Zoom with them. But there's going to come a time where it's going to be harder to do that. But for the time being, in our client caseload right now, I love being the client relations guy too.
Okay. And so your assistant, they're coming up with the ad copy, they're doing the graphics, they're doing all that stuff, and they're, you know, setting up those campaigns?
Yep. So essentially what my assistant does on the fulfillment side is the copywriting with input from me. But like I said, my assistant is so talented. I think she's an even better copywriter than I am in a lot of junctures. Like, my goal is to hire people who are even better at doing the work than I am, right? So yeah, the copywriting, typically on the ad creative, the images and videos, we rely on our client to provide that to us. Because, you know, we're not in their business every single day. We're not the social media manager that's there with the iPhone taking the pictures of the special of the day or the newest offer or what have you. So we typically try to have an open dialogue and file with them to use for ad creatives. And then my assistant also handles the ad monitoring. So we have an ad out there. Is it performing well? Is it not? What kind of changes based on, you know, is the CPM high? Okay, that tells us that Facebook doesn't really like our ad the way it sits. Maybe we need to change up the copy, get a little bit more engagement on it. Is the CTR really low? All right, that means our image is, you know, probably crappy. We need to change the image or start using a video or vice versa. So, you know, is our CTR really high, but where our conversions on our landing page is really low? We need to fix our landing page. So that's the type of stuff that she handles first and foremost, and then brings me in when needed, or if there's other things that I want to bring to the account, we'll have our weekly meetings and hash those things out.
Like a weekly or monthly kind of monitoring cadence or reporting cadence to say what's working, what's not working, what do we need to tweak and keep things moving forward there.
And that's in addition to, I report to all my clients every Monday morning on how the last week went. So that's part of my open dialogue with clients is a weekly email that says, hey, here's typically the top two stats that you need to know about your ads this week. And if everything is good, we're great. We'll say, hey, we're doing well this week. We're going to let these puppies keep running. Or we say, look, this ad, we tanked here. Or, you know, there's a change based on the data that we want to make. Here's how we're going to make it. Then we're going to let this run this week or the next few days, run a split test or what have you. And we just keep them abreast of everything. We keep that communication door open.
Yeah, this was something that Jeff DiOrio from Elite Chess mentioned recently, which I thought was really cool. And a similar like recurring revenue business, in his case, you know, teaching chess to, you know, school age kids versus, you know, running Facebook ads for businesses. But, you know, to keep people coming back month after month after month was like, how do I give them a sense of progress? And it sounds like same idea here with these weekly reporting. Here's what's working. You know, here are the metrics that matter. You know, here's how we're doing for you. Right. So it's like, not like, hey, these people just, you know, they took my money and ran and, you know, I never hear from them again. So just trying to keep in touch there.
It's very easy to do that in this business for sure, because there are a lot of agencies where they, you know, you meet with them on day one, set everything up, and then you don't hear from maybe for a month, 2 months. And a lot of clients I have are like, yeah, we never heard from. We didn't know. I'll ask them, what was your ROI? And they'd be like, I have no idea.
Anything on the tools and tech side that makes your life easier that you swear by?
Yeah. So probably the biggest one would be Zapier. We use that for our local lead gen. So for example, in our event lead gen, it's an awesome automation system that will line up with a Facebook lead format. So when an end user submits their name, email, and phone number with which to be followed up, from there, Zapier automates the lead information. It drops it in a Google spreadsheet so we can track it, and it timestamps it. And then from there, it sends a text message and or email, depending on what the client chooses, directly to them within 5 minutes. So that way, if I'm sitting at my desk as a wedding coordinator and a lead comes in, a couple minutes later, I get a text on my phone. It says johndoe@johndoe@gmail.com. Here's his number. All that coordinator has to do is click that text, pulls it right up on their phone, and they can follow up with them quickly. So Zapier is probably our favorite one to use, most commonly used for lead automation.
Mistakes or surprises along the way? Anything you do differently if you had to start over?
The biggest thing for me was getting over the fear, the imposter syndrome, first of all, but then the fear of putting myself out there for client acquisition. If I were to start over, I would really try and start really hot and heavy into just trying to have no fear going out there, you know, putting out to the world what I do and how well I do it and how I can help you. I think that my biggest mistake was just being afraid. You know, it took me 11 months, and I will freely admit that most of that was me being afraid to really put out there what I could do, you know, battling the imposter syndrome, even though I had proven to myself that I can do this. I had a friend of mine who was a real estate agent. He let me run ads for him. He covered the ad spend, but I worked for him for free just to really prove to myself that I could generate leads, in this case for a real estate agent. But even after that, it's like, you know, I really need to convince people that I can do this. But at the end of the day, it was convincing myself that I can do it.
Totally. I think it's very natural, at least from my perspective too, to have the confidence to say, I can do this and I am awesome at it. And oh, by the way, it's $1,500 a month, you know, pay me. So I like this strategy of, hey, maybe I could find a pro bono client, you know, get in some reps and kind of level up. That's what my wife and her partner did in their photography business, starting out with ridiculously low rates and then kind of leveling up as they felt more comfortable, like as that imposter syndrome kind of got, you know, pushed away a little bit. But I appreciate you sharing that. Brian, where are you taking this thing? What's next for you and for Ricochet?
My motto this year is 2022 is the year of scaling. So that's where I'm bringing on help in business development, to where I'm not just going to be relying on my referral network. Because while referral network business is fantastic, you know, your conversion rates are always going to be higher with that. I don't think it's a great way to scale or scale faster. So we're bringing on a partner to help us in business development on the Ricochet side. And then there's an opportunity that I have that it's still very much in the infancy stages, but the possibility of doing what I do in automotive and bringing that into a completely new entity. So this automotive piece is running ads on behalf of car dealers to a piece of financial tech that helps people shop by payment. And I've been doing this really well. This is my longest tenured client in this space. And I'm looking to bring this to the automotive industry on a much more, on a much larger scale, and then growing this into being a one-stop digital marketing shop for automotive dealers, whether they're independent, smaller, local dealers, all the way up to larger franchise dealers.
There you go. An illustration that opportunities become visible once you're already in motion, and you never know where these conversations lead, and side hustles on side hustles. I love it. Really appreciate you joining me. RicochetDM.com is where you can find him. Let's wrap this thing up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
Do something, no matter how little, at least once a day, that is going to help you get closer to your goal. Whether it's, you know, a side hustle, learning a new skill to apply to a side hustle, whether it's reading a chapter in a book, or, you know, watching 5 minutes of a course that you're a part of, doing something, minimum one small thing, even if it's a couple minutes every single day, and using basically the effect of compound interest. The more you do, even in small bits, the more you're going to learn, the more confidence you're going to build. And the once you have that higher confidence, you're going to be able to go out and produce this service or product on a much deeper level. So for me, it was, my whole thing was, I have no plan B. There's going to be no quitting at this. And Mike and Bobby always taught me, if you do one small thing every single day, then you're going to, over time, it's going to build and build and build. And it's definitely come true for me.
Yeah, I like that call to leverage some compound interest, you know, stack up these incremental gains and really make it a habit, because otherwise you might look at your calendar and say, well, I'm never going to have this uninterrupted 36-hour block of time to get this done. But like you said, you could start chipping away at that one day at a time. And I really appreciate that call to make some daily progress towards your goal. So again, Brian, thanks so much for joining me, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Nick. I appreciate you having me on.
You bet. All right. Hope you enjoyed that chat with Brian. One of the biggest takeaways for me was Brian's advice to live 1 year in the future. Of course, you know, be present, enjoy the moment, all of that. But as an entrepreneur, think about where your business is headed. I thought that little comment about living 1 year in the future was a really interesting reframe on how you can start living and preparing for that future today, whether it's by building systems or creating processes to remove yourself from certain elements of the business. That's definitely one I'm going to put into use myself. The other big notes for me were on Brian. Yes, investing in himself to learn new skills and then going out to sell those skills. We've seen countless examples of that on the Side Hustle Show, but it bears repeating. The inventory of skills and experience that you have today doesn't have to be set in stone. You can always add on more in-demand skills to your knowledge base. Brian mentioned the Laptop Empires Facebook Side Hustle course several times and gave them a lot of credit. You can learn more about that at sidehustlenation.com/FB course. For Facebook course, sidehustlenation.com/FB course. That is an affiliate link. So thank you for your support if you do choose to check that out. And finally, I like Brian's comment about how sometimes a niche finds you, in this case, in the brewery and event space. What that allowed Brian to do was to develop some specific systems around that type of client, which gets everyone better results faster. For any type of service business, I've got to think this combination of niching down and systemizing is a big opportunity to improve your profitability, improve your effective hourly rate. Notes and links to all the resources mentioned in this episode are at sidehustlenation.com/Brian, B-R-I-E-N. And you can learn more about the Facebook Ads Side Hustle course that started this whole business for him at sidehustlenation.com/FB course. Big thanks to Brian for sharing his insight. Thanks to FreshBooks for sponsoring this week. Go ahead, start your 30-day free trial of the number one invoicing and accounting solution for side hustlers and freelancers everywhere at freshbooks.com/sidehustle. That is it for me. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, let's go out there and make something happen, and I'll catch you in the next edition of The Side Hustle Show. Hustle on.